We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello, guys, and welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. My name is Matt Harvey, and I will, as always, be your host for another look at the news this week. Coming to you just in time at the end of another very busy month, because October is, and I'm sure you are already aware, Lupus Awareness Month, Dyslexia Awareness Month, Spina Bifida Awareness Month, Foot Health Month, this year, of course, being sponsored by WikiFeet, International Breast Cancer Awareness Month, October, Buy Nothing New Month, a hard one for those who haven't really mastered the art of not eating for a month, Mental Health Month, Dogtober, Crime Prevention Month, National Safe Work Month, and of course, National Awareness Month, Awareness Month, where we ask awareness campaigns to be aware of each other and not to ask us to do too much or give up too much in a single month, because we have enough collective guilt from Silently Remember Your Past Wrongs Month in September, as I'm sure you'll all remember. Just a couple of quick messages before we get into it. I will, of course, be doing my storytelling and stand-up show Wage Against the Machine in Wellington for the Wellington Fringe, in Newcastle for the Newcastle Fringe, as part of the Melbourne International Comedy Festival, and other places? Who knows? Maybe. We are definitely working on it. I'm going to try and get myself around to a festival near you. I'm pretty confident I'm going to be going to Edinburgh this year. So if you're interested in going to any of those festivals and seeing that show, that is definitely the best way to support this podcast. Unless you want to make a donation, of course, or point me in the direction of a wealthy dowager who just has money to spare. Either of those suggestions I am open to. And until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. Let's get into the headlines. AT&T Illinois have to pay $23 million after it admitted to making payments to one of former Illinois Speaker of the House, Michael J. Madigan's lobbyists, in return for his vote and influence over a bill. The lobbyists got suspicious after the money was extremely delayed and came through only in patches. And then when they contacted them to find out what was happening, they were of course charged a $70 fee to reconnect the service. An unnamed AT&T spokesperson told Ars Technica, "We hold ourselves and our contractors to the highest ethical standards. We are committed to ensuring that this never happens again." It's just standard corporate grade, big old whoopsie. And we will be applying all the lessons we learned from our company's ethical guide, Biggles Hides the Nazi Gold, and the Bezos Big Book of Business Ethics. We will hope to do better in the future. 800,000 brain cells were grown together by a Melbourne-led team of scientists in an experiment that they've named Dish Brain. The cells have learned to play the computer game Pong. In a typically Australian next step, the scientists plan to get them drunk to see if they play worse when drunk. Then they'll try to teach them to play Wheel of Goon. The really weird part is the final stage of the experiment will involve seeing if they can simulate a philosophy class for them to struggle to pass, which will then open their mind to the idea that they're merely a consciousness left to exist in a jar as part of a larger experiment to see if they can simulate existential dread. Country Liberal Party Senator Jacinta Price has slammed Labor and left-leaning do-gooders over the end of Centrelink's cashless welfare card, saying critics have no idea what life is really like in Indigenous communities. Just makes sense when you realise Price, an Indigenous woman, was simply out to prove to her party that she is the equal of any of the white men by not really caring about the most vulnerable members of her own community. Apple is withholding its latest employee benefits from staff who work at its sole unionized retail store. Now, I believe this is the invisible hand of the market that businesses are always talking about. But for more, you can read all about it in this month's edition of Cunty Plurocrat Monthly. The October edition is the month that they have the pullout, where a politician waiting to be bought dresses up as a working class schlub, but sexy. Ooh. Defence Minister Richard Marles has declared Australian troops could be sent to the Ukraine to help train the country's armed forces following Russia's attack on Kyiv. We will be teaching them important war skills like rebranding war as peacekeeping, doing whatever America wants you to do, how to abandon a local population to the enemy, and eventually we will deploy a bunch of emus to assist the Ukrainians as they remain our most undefeated war force. Disgraced Victoria MP Tim Smith is claiming $15,000 of taxpayer money, roughly $400 a week, for a parliamentary car allowance, despite being banned from driving after crashing his car while under the influence in October of last year. Look, it makes sense when you think about it, as further reports reveal that Smith is yet to pay for repairs to the damage he caused when he crashed his Jaguar into a residential property. So he's going to need that $15,000 to pay for an excellent and heartless lawyer to take on the family. I hear the team that represented Clive Palmer against his underpaid workers needs a new pointless hill to die on, so I'm looking forward to that. Ramstein has legally banned infamous secondary ticket retailers Viagogo from selling their concert tickets in their 2023 concert tour. Here's my question. Can you even enjoy a concert if you haven't ruthlessly fought your way to the front of a ticket queue only to be sniped by a bot at the last moment, then pay 1,000% of the price, sacrificing rent and groceries and tipping the delicate ecosystem of a minimum wage worker's finances in order to see a band who likely won't come again in your lifetime because your country is so far isolated from the remainder of the world it isn't financially viable for them, a successful band, to travel to? What kind of stories will future generations of music fans have to pass down to their children? Oh, I went online and I bought a ticket in 20 minutes for that recommended retail price. That's real rock and roll right there. According to a new supercomputer simulation, the Pacific Ocean's days are numbered, as Earth's continents will meld to form a new supercontinent named Amazia. In keeping with tradition, anti-climate change activists jumped on the announcement to denounce climate change science, releasing their own study set to be published in Tinfoil Aficionado magazine. No need to panic though, the Pacific still has another 300 million years to go and may even reach its billionth birthday before finally trickling out of existence. But at that age, you know, it's hard to stay relevant, so it's probably best that it trickles off at that point. Be it in years or dollars, once you hit the billion mark, you just don't have what it is to stay connected with other people. New Zealand's Art Council has pulled funding for a Shakespeare festival that has been running in secondary schools for roughly three decades after questioning its relevance to the country and because it focuses on a canon of imperialism. Creative NZ was very quickly accused of cancelling the Bard, whose books were promptly removed from all schools, copies of all film adaptations were obliterated, and all Shakespeare professors and any actor who had ever performed a Shakespearean play on New Zealand soil would be rounded up and locked in one of those secret underground billionaire end-of-the-world bunkers, which was then launched into space. And while Sam Neill will be missed, it was a good and necessary sacrifice to the woke gods. Victoria will be the first Australian jurisdiction to begin negotiating treaties with First Nations groups next year, after a historic deal was brokered to allow traditional owners to enter into interim agreements during negotiations. Following the negotiations with First Peoples, Victoria will enter into an even trickier and more severe negotiation, as it will attempt to treaty between New South Wales and Victoria, possibly ending the long-standing rivalry in 2023. So far, negotiations have stuck on which city they will turn their combined hatred on, with Brisbane being the third largest city, but Adelaide still being Adelaide. It's a tough negotiation. The UK Prime Minister voted most likely to be remembered by someone with the phrase, "Oh yeah, I remember her," after you mentioned their name, Liz Truss, has resigned after only 6 weeks in office. After the record short 45-day period, and its predecessor, the most confusing PM, Boris Johnson, the Tory party will attempt to dodge future controversy by running a candidate less likely to damage the party's reputation. Rolf Harris. A court has found Aldi breached employment laws by directing employees to begin work 15 minutes before their rostered starting time, which could make them liable for compensation. The revelation is bittersweet, as it may cost them millions of dollars in compensation, but also has cemented Aldi as the official third supermarket in a triopoly of grocery stores, joining Coles and Woolworths as a major provider of wage theft across the nation. Australia's Bureau of Meteorology has announced it wants to be rebranded in an attempt to be taken more seriously. Australia has brought in Zack Snyder to help with the darker, grittier rebrand, but after it was too dark, they then turned back on that decision and brought in Taika Waititi to do a brand punch-up with the somewhat distinct mix of comedic and serious, making them the Bureau of Mini-Apocalyptic Events instead. Moving on now to bigger news. First, we're going to start with last-ditch desperation news. Australia, the home of the flame-grilled endangered species. Environment Minister and the PM who never was, Tanya Plibersek, said Australia will set aside at least 30% of its landmass for conservation to protect plants and animals after a 5-yearly environmental report card showed that we were one of the worst rates of species decline among the world's richest countries and losing more mammal species than any other continent. We did it, Australia! We're number one! America might kill its citizens in record numbers due to gun inaction, but we kill animals. People are terrified of people who kill animals. We are the continental equivalent of Ted Bundy, in that we are just charming enough that people don't suspect that we are dangerous, and we secretly hurt animals. Australia is the 6th largest country by land area in the world and is home to unique animals like the koala and platypus. Well, it is for now, and is sure to be the once and future site of the Koala and Platypus Memorial Burned Forest and Centre for Obvious Warnings to Future Generations. After the number of species added to the list of threatened species or to a higher category of risk grew on average by 8% from the previous report in 2016 due to extreme weather events, human encroachment into their habitats, and capitalism. Now, the Coalition has, without any sense of irony, self-awareness, or self-reflection, urged authorities to go further and invest in time-bound recovery plans for every threatened species, demanding time-sensitive production of a time machine so that they can go back to before the 9 years of Coalition inactivity destroying the environment for fun and profit. The Federal Labor Government has pledged $224.5 million to help protect Australia's threatened native plants and animals, prioritising 110 species and 20 places, increasing the areas managed for conservation by 50 million hectares. And on the off chance that we fuck up the saving of land animals, we've also set aside $200 million for the preservation of the barrier reef. If everything goes as expected, we will end up failing and losing our unique and distinct wildlife and ecosystem, completely ruining any chance of Disney/Pixar creating a successful sequel/franchise resurrection to Finding Dory, forcing Disney to step in and spend a lot of money painstakingly recreating the barrier reef with their Imagineers, then cloning a lot of fish to populate the setting, but in exchange, we will have to sign over rights to the reef, and Disney will convert it into a theme park attraction, Disney presents the Finding Nemo Reef and Laser Light Spectacular and Outback Steakhouse, where they will also clone some of the land animals back into existence, but only to have a full list of exotic meats available for consumption. Moving on now to hate group news. Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party, the only party worse than your nana's tea party, and the Australian Christian Lobby are among 20 groups identified as Australian far-right hate and extremism groups in a new report by a global anti-hate think tank, the Global Project Against Hate and Extremism, the awkwardly acronymed GFAE, a group so against hate that it hates itself for hating hate, but accepts that it is a necessary evil, like arming every American citizen with an automatic rifle in order to finally wipe out gun violence. The group published the report, Far-Right Hate and Extremist Groups, which includes research on the major groups operating in Australia, their history and their beliefs. An extensive list which covered a number of obscure hate groups, but failed to list the Coalition, despite their long-running history of platforming anti-LGBTQI candidates, attempting to enforce antiquated church ideals, defund renewable science research immensely, provided the safe, soily base George Christensen and Craig Kelly germinated in until they were ready to spread their hateful wings and fly solo, anti-refugee, and were also anti-poor. But hey, they're merely a conduit to greater levels of hatred, a mere Pikachu of extremism compared to One Nation and Friends' Raichu of extremism, the much lesser known evolution who will never make it onto the lunchbox and family-friendly merchandise. That is what Pikachu is for. A friendly face to hatred. One Nation has the dubious honour of being the most mainstream of the listed entities because of its anti-immigrant, anti-Muslim, white nationalist and conspiracy ideology. A real conundrum of Ouroboros, where her baseless conspiracies of persecution drew the attention of the people she claimed to try and protect, who rejected their new horrible saviour and turned against her, persecuting her baseless ideas with facts and knowledge and empathy like cowards. Also identified are many Australian groups linked to international hate groups. These include far-right Hindu nationalists allegedly attacking Sikhs in Australia, anti-trans groups spawned from UK equivalents, and Australian arms of US-based neo-Nazi groups that have since split up and, according to the authors, likely integrated into Australian hate groups. A surprisingly diverse mix of hatred for a group who all claim, like a Highlander of bigotry, perhaps once they have all eliminated their rivals, they will turn on each other and they'll have like a bracket-style system of bigotry whittling down the groups and forcing them to put their money where their monstrous opinions are, in their mouth. The report refers to One Nation's representatives' public comments going back to Pauline Hanson's comments in a Queensland Times letter about Indigenous peoples that led to her disendorsement from the Liberal Party. Yes, that was a thing. Pauline Hanson was almost a member of the Liberal Party now before bravely branching out with her own unique brand of silly insular economic systems, impish denying of being racist while absolutely being racist, mischievous approach to anti-immigration xenophobia, her waggish prison sentence for political fraud, and her abhorrent continuous appearances on Australian television programs like Dancing with the Stars, Bert's Family Feud, and Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? And like her hero and vision board centerpiece, Adolf Hitler, she's just an artist who couldn't make it and lashed out. Where Hitler was a failed painter, Hanson was a young, fresh-faced singer on New Faces in 1985, and the Australian people's reluctance to accept Australian arts has led her to hate foreigners, because if there was no foreign art, then we'd only have Australian art. And she would have to be the next Olivia Newton-John. So guys, I think the simple message here is you've got to make sure that you support local art. You can start by coming seeing my shows. Moving on now to greenwashing news. The Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has announced at least 200 company websites will be reviewed for misleading environmental claims. The sectors to be probed include energy, vehicles, household products and appliances, food and drink packaging, cosmetics, clothing, and footwear. A spokesperson for the Retail Environmental Simulacrum and Simulation Department was quoted as saying, "It's not easy being greenwashed." Modern philosophy's greatest mind, Kermit the Frog, was decades ahead of his generation. Hill and Knowlton Strategies, which has worked for ExxonMobil, Shell, Chevron, and Saudi Aramco, is managing communications for Egypt's presidency in the UN Climate Conference, which will take place next month in Sharm el-Sheikh. Hill and Knowlton's clients have also included Coca-Cola, which last month was controversially named as a sponsor of the conference despite having been declared the world's worst corporate plastic polluter 4 years in a row. A record for the famous non-alcoholic drink, the universe's number one and most elaborate sugar farmer side hustle. If they want to properly wash their reputation, they will have to do it both the old-fashioned way and the new way, by holding a renewable and energy-efficient major sporting event, a sort of green sports washing, something like Formula One will become Formula 10,000 BC, combining the Tour de France as national teams get inside a Flintstones foot-powered car to race around a track. Or basketball rings will do double duty as windmills, with them protruding through the roof, or all basketball games will have to be played outdoors. Same will apply for AFL goalposts. All ice-based sports will be stopped immediately, as there will be no more ice due to the failure of greenwashing to make a difference. They will be converted into land-based games instead. And horses will no longer be used for sports, as they produce too many emissions. Humans will instead piggyback one another instead. However, greenwashing is an act of cowardice. People know what they are going to a business for. I do not go to a McDonald's because they introduce a wide salad range. No. I am there because it is a last resort. The day is a write-off, and I either have or am preparing to avoid a hangover that will give me a splitting headache larger than Valles Marineris, the Grand Canyon of Grand Canyons. I know what the business is and what purpose it serves and what positives there are. Businesses just need to learn to lean into the evil, just like Amazon did. Amazon openly destroys its planet, workers, other businesses, and has a CEO who makes so much money he built a whole space company so that he could shoot himself into space just so he could see if it is really as big as they say it is, so that he could confirm the solution to saving the planet isn't polluting less, but is in fact sending our pollution into space along with all of our working class after the pristine thrill of space has been clustered by all of the pollution. Yet people still shop with them because waiting for more than 2 days for a third pair of tongs with duck's face forming the shape of the head so it looks like the ducks are trying to steal your food and you can say, "Hey, that's my dinner, you cheeky ducks." Only $14.99, same day delivery with Amazon Prime. Because they have made their choice. They already don't use plastic straws and they recycle. Sometimes, when it's convenient and they remember to, and they're pretty sure that they didn't put a pizza box with cheese still in it in the recycling. Yeah, nobody checks. No need. It's fine. Don't worry about checking. It's fine. I did it. I definitely did it. It's good. We just have to create an ethical star rating for businesses, I think. Put it in place of the health star ratings. Because let's be honest, we can usually guess the health star rating of a food product. It's not that complicated. Now we slap our trusty ethical star rating sticker on the business. And it's much easier than Googling every single company when you come into a new town. It's a lot of work, and if I'm honest with you, it uses up a lot of carbon emissions for me to Google them all. Moving on now to human rights news. The United Nations. If not being mad but disappointed was an international organization. The United Nations Human Rights Committee has found the Australian government violated the rights of people living on four islands in the Torres Strait and has ordered it to pay for the harm caused. The committee ruled we had failed to protect islanders from the effects of climate change, making their claim the first successful one of its kind. Upon hearing that there was a chance of support going to locals for past harms done, Tasmania started preparing its own case for emotional harm caused by being the mainland's joke state. The Torres Strait Islanders case claimed that the Australian government had failed to take immigration and adaptation measures to combat the effects of climate change and had therefore failed to protect their human rights. A reasonable claim, given the coalition's near godlike ability to ignore the needs of the most vulnerable and still expect to be elevated for worship. The coalition then responded by reminding Torres Strait Islanders that they already have a long-term plan in place for the drowning of island nations, even if those island nations aren't technically nations, they're actually part of Australia. And that is bringing those people into Australia to pick our fruit.
How'd your time?
That's his mate.
How'd your time? Yeah, I tell you, we had a bit of that up in Port Moresby.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, it was a good meeting.
Not to mention that Susan Ley, the people's antagonist, successfully appealed against a high-profile court decision that found she had a duty of care to protect young people from the climate crisis when assessing fossil fuel developments. A development I believe they are calling the "too bad, so sad" ruling, a horrifying precedent that takes inspiration from such historic cases as Finders v Keepers and the lesser-known Losers v Weepers. The committee ruled that the Australian government did violate islanders' rights in failing to implement adaptation measures to protect their homes, private lives, and families from the threat of rising sea levels, as well as their ability to maintain a traditional way of life and to pass on their culture and traditions to future generations, and that Torres Strait Islanders were entitled to compensation for the harm that they have suffered as salt water is killing traditional food sources such as coconuts, and storm surges have washed away culturally significant sites, including graveyards. The government has 180 days to respond, and there is still a lot of uncertainty about what it will do. In the wake of the decision, ministers have said they are committed to working with the islanders on climate change. However, an early leak of the Australian counter-argument has made its way online, and we here at the Bearer of Weird News have managed to get our hands on the leak. It's amazing how hard our team works to get these things for you, our dedicated audience. So, the argument claims that by respecting Torres Strait Islander culture, we would in fact be committing our own cultural genocide, as digging up materials is our major cultural identity, which we have been doing since our culture sprung into life. Not to mention, being cruel to brown people was actually our first action as a people, and sure, it is a derivative of the English colonies that came here, but we have taken it on in our own direction, you know, made it our own, and then because of our extended levels of cruelty, have had to become really good at sports in order to sports wash our international reputation, so that when people look at us and think, oh, those are harmless white people who are really obsessed with being good at sport for no particular reason at all. Nothing to look at here, nothing to hide. And a final level of cultural identity is being abusive of people who live on other islands. See, our status as Big Daddy Island, we must treat all other islands as inferior and judge them accordingly. Be they our own satellite islands like the Torres Strait, which are legally Australian territory, but are also full of brown people. See point one for further clarity on that. Neighbouring island countries like Nauru and Manus, which were used as floating prison islands for refugees so that human rights crimes would happen in other people's countries rather than in our own, the same way that, allegedly, we would be removed from Disneyland before being declared deceased, so that Disneyland can maintain a pristine reputation of having no one ever died there, allegedly. But our policy of island bullying even extends to mostly white populated islands like Tasmania, which will maintain joke state status as long as it is too cowardly to join the mainland via some sort of giant bridge or underwater tunnel. Fortunately, however, Scott Morrison is no longer in charge, so the argument that they are lucky that we haven't met them with bullets has not been yet put to the front. Moving on now to mutual obligation failure news. Mutual obligations. For our non-Australian, non-Centrelink receiving listeners, mutual obligations is the system by which we bully the unemployed into a series of tasks in order to justify the money that they are giving so that they don't die, but continue to exist well below the poverty line. You know, like the show Taskmaster, but sometimes people die. Tony Burke, the Minister of Employment and Workplace Relations, Leader of the House, Minister for the Arts, and Minister for repaying more than $8,600 of taxpayer money spent on flying his family to Uluru for a holiday, gave a speech, mostly unreported on, to Workforce Australia's National Forum in Brisbane, where he gave the job service providers a much-needed warning that if they continue to fuck around, they will find out. A legal threat from at least one of the job service providers in the $1.5 billion a year privatised welfare system has prompted Burke to warn the sector that unlike people caught within their web of exploitation, he actually has flexibility within contracts and he intends to use it. The new Labour government finds itself caught between a rock and a hard-headed place, as for decades, their own rhetoric has demanded job seekers prove that they are working some way and somehow for their benefits, and the dreaded mutual obligations of ill repute were brought into existence. But now, there is overwhelming evidence that this system simply punishes the unemployed without improving their chances of finding employment. And the major pivot point of the Labour Party, according to the Labour Party, is that they don't just do whatever they want despite a lack of evidence, and often don't do what they say they want despite an overwhelming abundance of evidence, because politics is all about balance. You've got one party who overreaches, you've got to have one party who doesn't reach at all. Now, much of Burke's speech was spent scolding job service providers for absurd abuses of processes that had been reported in the media, and even a few that hadn't, though admittedly those are much harder to prove, saying, "We must never fall into it. The argument of saying, oh look, yes, sometimes things go wrong, but most of the time we get it right. With public funds, we don't get away with that argument." Yes, that is purely a statement for private funding, and occasionally for public funding, which is given to private institutions. This is a statement that has yet to make its way to most of politics, who mostly try to get it into politics for the near unfettered access to public money, bending it to their business like a money bender, the fifth and lesser known form of bender from the world of Avatar. They really didn't come into prominence until much later in the timeline. Maybe we'll see them in a new season. Going on to say, we should be supporting people, not making everyone run around like hamsters in a wheel and do things that make them anxious, depressed, and less employable. As most psychologists will confirm, this will happen anyway when they stay in their shitty job for too long out of fear of losing their home and inability of their new low-paying job to afford them to save money to take a day off in order to interview for a better-paying job, causing them to sink further into a spiral of anxious depression where one's anxiety drives their worries that one's depression will make them too depressed to return to their terrible job unless they get anxious enough to remember that their terrible job is the only thing keeping them from being homeless. So then there's no need to rush the process along now, is there? It'll inevitably happen in the great circle of anxious depression. The inevitable hand of capitalism will deliver, as it always has. For those who are still unsure, Labour MP and TikTok darling Julian Hill has admitted the system does not result in proper work. casual jobs count for an outcome. And the term outcome there is flagged by quotation marks, marking it as such a sarcastic statement that it could actually be the main character of a 90s nihilistic teen-targeted comedy. A casual job also would provide bonus payments. And as such, officials are less interested in longevity. After all, if someone comes back through their door in 6 months to a year, they can score another bonus payment. And the system measures outcomes only up to 6 months. Beyond that, nobody knows what happens to those who successfully exited the caseload. Tony Burke claims to be looking for any opportunity to make changes to the system within the contracts, rather than just waiting for the contracts to expire in 4 years. Despite the obvious flaws and issues with the system, Labour will not end mutual obligations. So it'd appear we've got two pretty major problems right now that can solve each other. We have Centrelink forcing the use of job service providers to force job seeker recipients into terrible jobs they then can't quit for fear of being cut off from payments, leading to an increased workplace abuse. And we have disruption capitalism, you know, the gig economy, the app economy, businesses like Uber and other apps who insist people on their platform aren't employees, they're independent contractors. We have these guys creating increasingly horrible jobs that people desperate to change their lives get sucked into. Well, these problems can solve one another, at least for a little while. See, if you're an independent contractor, as Uber insists, you aren't an employee. You are a business owner, right? And I can tell you, as a business owner, you don't have to search for jobs. You can get JobSeeker to support you while you run your business. Well, this way, we can get rid of job service providers, maybe forever, at least until we fix the gig economy. See, we sign everyone up on JobSeeker to one app, any app, your choice. You get everybody an ABN, and you declare them as a business to Centrelink. Then they can do as little as one shift a month on any of their new businesses while they take their time properly searching for a job that actually makes them happy and is safe for them to do. Just between us, they could even take advantage of some of the tax loopholes that businesses get that regular people don't, you know, write off some of their petrol expenses and whatnot, but that's just between us. If we want to close loopholes and remove job service providers, this is how we do it. We want to fix disruption capitalism? This will get the ball rolling. They'll either be shutting down business tax loopholes left, right, and center, or they'll be fixing the gig economy. Either way, they can't be having it benefit the little people. And finally, public servant news. With a new government in town, there's a mandate to follow up on that whole being better than the other guy thing that they got voted in on. So let's check in and see how the Labour Party is making good on its promise to not be the other guy. Well, looky here! Seems Labour has started strong with a promise of introducing the dreaded truth in advertising laws for political advertising going forward. Always a good time, always good to see, as we call them on this podcast, in the past, the fuck you Platformer laws. Debate over political advertising laws was rekindled after independent MP and certified Abbott Slayer, Zali Steggall, unveiled a draft bill to ban political parties from publishing misleading or deceptive material, saying gaps in federal laws meant that it was perfectly legal to lie in election material, which had contributed to an erosion of public trust in politics. The rest of the trust had actually been eroded by the actual actions of politicians while they were in power. But it is important to acknowledge that if a political party fucked up while in power, and you voted them in again because they told you that they wouldn't do it again, well, the party is no longer lying to you. You are lying to yourself. And so you have to wear some of that responsibility. You voted them in to tuck you into bed before the apocalypse and tell you sweet bedtime stories of how the economy is strong and how you'll be safe and nothing needs to change ever. Then they don't even have the courtesy to smother you with a pillow after you fall asleep. Because only somebody who cares about you would ever give you the sweet release of death when you could be paying more taxes. So it isn't really a surprise that the Liberal Party has resisted a suite of reforms for the 2025 election that will improve transparency in campaigning, including spending caps and truth in political advertising. Seems the party is so desperate to lie that even their own members are teasing the electorate by coquettishly suggesting maybe they aren't with the coalition party this year. Transforming themselves into the mystery box subscription of political candidates, as you don't know what is truly inside them until after you've bought them. And like most mystery boxes, it's just a mishmash of products unwanted when they were in stores and then being bulk sold to companies with the claim that they are exclusive and rare and only true fans should want them all. The reforms will be bundled together with Labour's election commitments for real-time disclosure of political donations and reducing the disclosure threshold to $1,000. In a submission to that inquiry, the Labour Party National Secretary Paul Erickson warned that laissez-faire regulation of spending and donations had allowed extremely high net worth individuals, groups, and networks to distort the political conversation with levels of advertising that were previously inconceivable in Australian elections. Going on to say, as a result, our elections are not fought on a level playing field. Makes sense that they'd be upset given that despite building 27 new coal mines, they received less funding than the Liberal Party from the Coal 21 Fund in 2020. Seems very unfair to be selling out the future prospects of the country for less than the current going rate. Although they did receive larger values than other parties from some groups, nobody has donated money to a political party anywhere near as much as Clive Palmer, who in 2019 made an $83.3 million donation by Clive Palmer's Mineralogy Pty Ltd to the United Australia Party, hence the fuck you Clive Palmer laws. In the Liberal Party submission, the federal director argued that Labor did not take a detailed proposal to the election on imposing caps on electoral expenditure, and arguably does not have a mandate to implement such a change. After all, we can't have politicians setting the standard that they'll do more than they said that they would do in an election, given the current standard is to not even meet the few things that you can get them to say that they will do without answering questions in circular logical puzzles. This is an outrageous standard set. How will politicians have time to secure investment portfolios, buy properties, and use grant schemes to drive government money through companies that they own if they also have to remember the things that they said that they would do in the past and be beholden to them? Climate 200, an activism group funding and supporting independent candidates in key suburbs, warned that major parties were advantaged by spending caps that were calculated based on how many seats the party was running in. They proposed the spending cap per seat should be significantly higher for new entrants and independent candidates, failing to realise what the Labour Party and the Liberal Party and other more experienced parties have already realised, that they can just take more donations in smaller amounts that don't have to be declared. Just a whole bunch of $999 donations across the board, though it is a much slower process. The Liberals warned that real-time disclosure of donations may lead to greater harassment of bullying of individuals and small businesses who wish to help political candidates. But this would mostly be for people who supported terrible parties like the Coalition, so nobody's really that worried. The Liberals asked the committee to inquire into whether social media influence were paid to sway votes by criticising Scott Morrison and whether this required political authorisation, refusing to accept that people just do not like them and may have given their thoughts and opinions freely. Though it does make sense, as many politicians, particularly coalition politicians, are pure tabula rasa, a blank slate of thoughts waiting to be filled by lobbyists who have spent time crafting talking points and carefully wrapping them in money instead of wrapping paper. And I'll just put this out there. The Bearer of Weird News, despite not being an influencer, will happily declare that they have received no money from either government bodies or audiences or jobs for their opinions against the coalition. But we are open to receiving payments. All payments can be made via our Linktree, or if you want, we can set up a little Patreon and you can give regular donations. This offer is open to any party from Labour left, and we can organise a series of donation levels where we will make statements of differing levels of anger and intensity depending on the level that you subscribe to. And that brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you so much if you hung around to the end for listening. I really appreciate your time. If you enjoyed it, please do pass it along. Do all the things, whatever platform you're on, likes and hearts, and share it, and give it to someone who you think would enjoy it. If you want to support the podcast, as always, you've got to come out to the live show. I think it's the best way to support the podcast, aside from liking and sharing and subscribing and rating 5 stars or 1 star. Remember, that's the system, 5 stars or 1 star. Be a coward or be a hero. And if you have enjoyed it, if you think this is the kind of thing that you'd get into, come and see my storytelling and stand-up show, Wage Against the Machine. Like I said, it's going to be in Wellington and in Newcastle, the Melbourne Comedy Festival, Edinburgh, a couple other places. Keep an eye out on my website or listen on the podcast, and we'll let you know where it's going to be in the future. Until then, look after yourselves, stay safe, and see you next time. Bye.